Welcome back to the Deep Dive. I have to say, usually when we sit down for these, we're looking at some scrappy startup.
Right, the move fast and break things crowd.
Exactly. But today, we're pivoting. We are looking at a document that is, well, it's arguably trying to do the exact opposite. It's about moving massive, heavy things.
Hopefully without breaking them.
That is a perfect way to put it. We're looking at the counterargument to disruption today.
We are.
So, we have a source text titled Chevrolet's Electric Evolution: The Future of the Open Road.
And the subtitle is, I think, even bolder.
Oh, it's way more aggressive.
Oh.
Why Chevy's new EV lineup is the future of the auto industry. So, before we get into the weeds, I have to ask, is this just marketing fluff?
Well, yes and no.
Because the future of the auto industry, I mean, that is a massive claim for a brand that's been around since what, black and white photography?
It is a massive claim. And yes, it is marketing, but it's marketing that's wrapping around a very specific, very high stakes business strategy. If you strip away the glossy photos, this document is essentially a manifesto
A manifesto for what?
on how a legacy giant plans to survive an extinction-level event. It's arguing that the startup model of the last decade, the Tesla model, let's just say, it isn't the end game.
So the argument is that the first mover doesn't necessarily win the war.
Exactly. The source suggests that the future doesn't belong to the disruptors who created the market. It belongs to the incumbents who can industrialize it. And that, I think, is what we really need to unpack today.
Okay, let's do it. Let's start with the first big strategic signal right there in the title. They call it Chevrolet's Electric Evolution. My initial reaction was just, okay, that sounds safe. It feels a bit like corporate speak for we're taking our time. Why not call it a revolution? Everyone else is.
That word choice evolution is doing a lot of heavy lifting. In the tech world, evolution is usually an insult. It means incremental, it means boring, right? But in the context of automotive manufacturing, revolution is a nightmare. A revolution means you scrap your factories, you fire your workforce, you burn your supply chain to the ground and start completely over.
Which is incredibly expensive and just fantastically risky.
It's often fatal for a company that size. So by choosing evolution, the source is signaling a strategy of integration, not replacement. They're arguing that their legacy assets, the factories, the supply chains, the dealer networks, they're not
Their
liabilities.
leverage.
They're leverage, exactly.
Okay, but let me play devil's advocate here for a second. Isn't that the classic innovator's dilemma?
How so?
Well, if you try to adapt your old way of doing things to a new technology, don't you usually end up with a compromised product? We've seen legacy companies try to shoehorn batteries into gas cars before, and they were just terrible.
That is absolutely the risk. You're completely right. If evolution just means we're going to swap the engine for battery and keep everything else the same, they will fail.
So what's different here?
The source text defines evolution differently. It's not about the engineering of the car being incremental, it's about the customer transition being incremental.
Okay, explain that. What does that mean?
The source argues that to get to mass adoption, you can't ask the average customer to join a cult. You can't ask them to relearn how to drive or, accept a car that looks like a spaceship.
Right.
You have to sell them a Silverado that just happens to be electric. The evolution is the bridge that carries the customer from the combustion era to the electric era without them feeling like they're jumping off a cliff.
So it's about familiarity as a feature.
Precisely. It's weaponizing normalcy.
Okay, so if evolution is the philosophy, let's look at the execution. The subtitle mentions Chevy's new EV lineup. Now, lineup is a standard car word, but why does it matter here?
This is actually, I think, the most technical and critical part of the whole document. When a startup launches an EV, what do they do?
They launch one car, usually some high-margin luxury sedan or an SUV.
Exactly, the halo car. You sell it for 100 grand to try and fund the cheaper cars later on.
Right. That's been the playbook for 15 years.
Correct. But what Chevy is doing is something that really only a legacy manufacturer can even attempt. The source emphasizes a lineup plural. We aren't talking about one car. We're talking about a compact SUV, a mid-size Blazer, and a full-size pickup truck.
All launching at basically the same time.
In essentially the same window, yes.
That just sounds like a logistical nightmare. I mean, why would you even try to do everything at once?
Because of the economics of the battery platform, the source alludes to a shared architecture, what the industry calls a skateboard platform.
Okay, break that down for us. What's a skateboard?
Think of it like a Lego base plate. You spend billions of dollars developing one really good battery system, motor layout, and software stack. That's your base plate.
Okay.
And once you have that, you can just snap different bodies on top of it. You can snap a truck body, an SUV body, a sedan body, all on the same underlying tech.
Wait, so the guts of a, say, $30,000 Equinox are essentially the same as the guts of an $80,000 Silverado?
Fundamentally, yes. And that is why the lineup is the strategy. If you only make one car, your battery costs per unit are huge. But if you make five cars across different segments using the same battery,
your volume goes through the roof and your cost per unit plummets.
It plummets. It's economies of scale.
Massive economies of scale.
And the source is arguing that this lineup approach is the only way to make EVs profitable for the mass market. They are betting that the future of the auto industry isn't about having the coolest tech.
It's about who can drive the cost of the battery down the fastest.
And you do that with volume.
That makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
But it also feels like a huge gamble, right?
Yeah.
If that base plate has a flaw, or if the software is buggy, it's not just one car that has a problem.
It's the whole fleet. It is an all-in bet. There is no hedging here. The document makes it very clear. This isn't an experiment. This is the new standard.
And that leads us right to that massive claim. The future of the auto industry. The source isn't saying Chevy's future. It's saying the whole industry's future is going to look like this.
And that's the key shift from the early adopter phase to the early majority. We've spent, the last decade in that early adopter phase, tech enthusiasts, wealthy buyers, people who wanted to make a statement.
Yeah.
The source argues that phase is over.
So we're entering the boring phase.
We are entering the critical phase. The early majority doesn't care about 0 to 60 times or bioweapon defense mode.
No.
They care about, does it fit my kids? Can I afford the monthly payment? And will it start when it's cold outside?
A grocery getter test.
A grocery getter test, exactly. The source claims that the future is the democratization of the technology. Until you can put an electric drivetrain into a boring, reliable crossover that costs the same as the gas version, the revolution is stalled.
And Chevy's argument is that their lineup is the first real attempt to crack that code.
It is.
It's interesting because it frames innovation not as new features, but as accessibility.
Yes. Innovation in manufacturing, not just innovation in software.
But, and there's a big but here, the source text doesn't just stick to the dry economics of it all. It pivots to something incredibly emotional. The main title is The Future of the Open Road.
Right. And this is where the strategy hits the real world.
I have to be honest. When I see open road and EV in the same sentence, my skepticism radar goes way off.
I get that.
Because the open road, I mean, that implies freedom. It implies spontaneity. I'm going to drive west until I hit the ocean. But driving an EV right now, it feels more like a math problem.
Yeah, it's a planning exercise.
You're calculating range. You're looking for chargers. You're waiting for 40 minutes in a Walmart parking lot. That is not the open road.
You've just hit on the central tension of the entire text. The open road is the American mythos. It's Jack Kerouac. It's Route 66. And it is built entirely on the infrastructure of the combustion engine gas stations on every corner, 5-minute refuels.
Exactly. So is the source trying to gaslight us? Are they trying to tell us that range anxiety just doesn't exist?
No, I don't think they're ignoring it. I think they are trying to redefine the terms. The source spends time talking about the capabilities, the range, the charging speed. But more importantly, they are trying to sell the idea that the open road experience is actually better with electric, not just comparable.
Better how? Because sitting in a charger is definitely not better than driving.
Well, look at the specific vehicles they highlight. They talk about trucks and SUVs. They emphasize things like silence, torque, smoothness. But they also touch on something we don't think about that often. The vehicle as a power source.
You mean like plugging things into the car?
Right. Vehicle to load. If you take a gas car camping, you have a loud engine if you want power. But if you take this new EV lineup camping, you essentially have a massive silent generator.
Oh, that's interesting.
You can power your campsite, your tools, your tailgate party. The source is arguing that the open road isn't just about the driving. It's about what you do when you get there.
That's a clever pivot. So they're expanding the definition of freedom. It's not just freedom to drive far. It's freedom to have power anywhere.
It's an attempt to turn the weakness, which is it's a big battery, into a strength. It's a big battery you can use.
But you're right to be skeptical about the driving west part.
Mm-hmm.
The source text does assert that the range capabilities, 300, 400 miles, are sufficient to kill range anxiety.
And 400 miles is a lot. That's a full day of driving for most people.
It is. The argument is that for 99% of use cases, The open road is perfectly accessible. But that 1%, that cross-country sprint, that's the psychological hurdle they're trying to lower.
And by attaching the brand Chevrolet to the open road, they're putting their reputation on the line. If a loyal Chevy Silverado owner buys this EV and gets stranded in the middle of Nevada,
that trust is breaking forever.
Forever.
And that's the legacy risk again. A startup can have bugs. A startup can say, oops, beta software.
Chevy can't. No. If you are selling the evolution of a trusted brand, the product has to work. The charging network has to work. And the source implies that by entering the market with this much volume, Chevy is also forcing the infrastructure to mature.
No.
When there are millions of these cars on the road, the charging network has to improve. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
So they're betting that demand will force the supply of infrastructure to catch up.
Basically, yes. They are using their sheer size to drag the infrastructure along with them.
So if we zoom out, this whole document is basically a declaration of war against the idea that new auto is going to replace old auto.
It's a counterinsurgency. It's the empire striking back. It's saying we have the factories, we have the dealers, we have the customers, and now we have the tech.
But do they have the agility? We talked about the platform, but software is the Achilles heel of legacy auto. The source talks about the new EV lineup, but does it address the digital experience? Because that's where Tesla usually wins.
The text touches on it, you know, promising a modernized interior and connectivity. But you're right, that is the unproven variable. You can stamp metal better than anyone, but can you code?
Right.
The source claims this lineup represents a new digital architecture, but that's the one place where evolution might not be enough. You might actually need a revolution in how you write software.
And that's the danger of that mindset.
Yeah.
You might evolve the body, but keep the old clunky brain.
Exactly. And if the interface lags, the whole future of the open road experience feels dated, even if the battery is great.
So if this all works, if this massive strategic bet pays off, what does the auto industry look like in 5 years?
If this strategy succeeds, and I mean, if they can actually produce these vehicles at a profit, which is not guaranteed, then the auto industry looks remarkably like it did 20 years ago.
Really?
Yeah. You'll have a few dominant, massive players providing a wide range of options for every demographic. The startup era will close. The window for new entrants will just shut.
Because they can't compete with that kind of volume.
Right. You can't compete with a company that can amortize its R&D across 4 million units when you're selling 40,000. This source text is essentially Chevy trying to slam that window shut.
That is a sobering thought for all the tech optimists out there.
Yeah.
The empire might actually win.
Or, at the very least, the empire ensures it has a seat at the table when the music stops.
Before we wrap up, I want to go back to that final image, the open road.
Mm-hmm.
We've analyzed the business side, but let's talk about the driver. You mentioned earlier that the definition of freedom might be changing.
I think it has to. The open road of the 20th century was about unconscious consumption. You just got in and drove. You didn't think about energy. The open road of the source text seems to be about conscious travel. It's more planned. It's more integrated with technology.
Oh, that sounds less romantic.
Maybe. Or maybe it's deeper. If you're more connected to your vehicle, more aware of your energy, more capable of using that vehicle as a tool when you arrive, maybe that's a richer experience.
It's a different kind of relationship with the machine. It's less of a beast of burden and more of a partner.
A partner.
Yeah.
A hub. A mobile command center. The source is betting that people will trade that old drive until empty freedom for this new tech-enabled capability.
Well, it's a bold bet. And for the sake of everyone who wants an electric car that actually fits their life and their budget, I kind of hope they're right.
The scale is what's needed. Whether it's Chevy or someone else, we need the lineup approach to work if we want this transition to actually happen for everybody.
So here's the question I want to leave you with today. We talked about evolution versus revolution. If you're in the market for a car in the next few years, which side of history do you want to be on? Do you want the revolutionary tech from the startup that might not exist in 10 years? Or do you want the evolved product from the giant that might be a little boring, but will definitely have parts available in 2035?
That is the ultimate consumer gamble. Do you bet on the disruptor or do you bet on the incumbent?
A question for the open road. Thanks for unpacking this with me. This was way more than just a headline analysis.
It's always about the strategy beneath the slogan.
Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you on the next deep dive.